Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, August 1st, 2000. In the fireside room this morning, we have Jeanette Blakey presenting session number 2001, titled Raising God's Child. Let's listen in.
Is saying this to God. Picture that your child, your children, they are the speaker in this reading. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. For it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works that I know very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes beheld my unformed substance. In your book were written all the days that were formed for me, when none of them as yet existed. I was wondering what did you experience during that, when you were picturing your child speaking those words to God?
Second son this summer had an accident and lost a finger, so I experienced some pain again. What that's meant for our whole family.
Mm-hmm. And your son crying out to him, to God.
Yeah.
You formed me. You knew me. Yeah. You knew all the days. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have an experience they'd like to share? One parent, when I did this, said that they experienced a shift, like they had to move over, like they were invited to get out of the way, so to speak, that it was no longer God, parent, child, but that the relationship, it's not like this. But it's more like a triangle. You know, we are not our children's intermediaries or intercessors to God. They have a direct relationship with God all their own. And that we have been called and brought to the point of being entrusted with this child that God has given us. And so we're going to think about during this session, how might we parent differently? How might we relate to children differently when we think of them as the Lord's children and not our own? This is my child with whom I can do what I want. And not think further about it. Okay, I'm going to ask you to be preoccupied with God during this hour as parent. So when we talk about Bible verses, this little book is called What is God's Name? And it's in the bookstore, and it suggests that just a couple of the pages, after God created the world, all living things were given a name. But no one knew the name of God, so each person looked for God's name. The farmer called God the source of life. And it goes on to the woman who took care of the sick called God healer. Today we're going to focus on the young woman who nursed her baby called God mother. The young man who held his baby's hand called God father. So those are the images of of God that we'll be thinking about and preoccupied with during this hour. Okay, I'd like to talk about three of the many, many things that I feel that the Bible reveals to us that are very significant about our job as parent and how we can learn about our role as parent and be inspired in our role as parent. Beginning with that we are told rather clearly in Genesis and throughout the Bible that we are created in the image of God. And that our relationship with God our relationship with our child is in the image of our relationship with God. And so when God invites us to call him father, mother, parent, he is revealing to us that he knows this. He knows this job. He is this job, or she is this job. God is the ultimate parent, and he uses in the parables the prodigal son, the vineyard keeper, many times. The kingdom of God is like this, and he goes on. Jesus will tell a parable, and it's a parent-child relationship. Like we in Michael Pellett's Bible study today, we talked about the prodigal son. So oftentimes in the parables, we do find the kingdom of God being spoken of as a parent-child relationship. In Romans 8:14, when we cry, Abba, Father, it is that very Spirit bearing witness with our spirit that we are children of God. Parent, child, mother, father, all of these images, God and us. You know, we can look at God as parent. We can see today in the prodigal son Bible study, the unconditional acceptance, the father being just the relationship was primary. You know, that was before the rules. That wasn't about, you know, if you stray from me, if you eat more cookies than I said that you could, I am now not in a relationship with you. The relationship is now severed or struggling. Or never do we call into question the relationship with our children, just like God never calls into question our relationship with God. Relationship is primary, rules are secondary. Necessary because they keep us safe, they teach us how to live in community, but the relationship is primary. And I think that is quite clear all throughout the Bible. We're created in the image of God, and we can learn from God. And it's funny, as I, throughout the years, keep this in mind, and this is not prescriptive. You can't say, well, you know, God did this, so I could do that. I mean, I'm not suggesting there's a direct one-on-one correlation. But there have been times that I thought that I just was so bad that day. I just thought, I can't believe my parenting on that day. And then I remember that God got so mad that he wiped out the earth. I mean, God became angry. He became impatient. He became frustrated. But what did he do? You know, and he's capable of it, and I'm not. This is why he's the role model, and I'm not. He said, I won't do that again. I won't do that again, you know. And then made the promise. But so it's interesting when you keep that lens on when you're reading the Bible, what kinds of things hit home. We were reading Cain and Abel, the story, yesterday in Michael Pellett's Bible study. And it was just interesting, the language in this. I mean, this could be one of us saying this to our kids. So Cain, you know, got angry that Abel's offering, that God regarded Abel's offering and not his own. And so he was very angry, and he didn't say anything to the Lord. But the Lord said to Cain, now can you picture, why are you angry? You know, we seek out our kids. Why are you angry? You know, why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not well, do well. Sin is lurking at your door. It desires you. I mean, this could be us saying, don't be jealous of your brother. This is okay. And be careful of that, because that could rise up to get you, you know. And then when Cain does go invite Abel to the field and kill him, God says, where's your brother? I mean, how many of us have said, where's your brother? Where's your sister? And then Cain says, you know, I don't know. You can picture the look on your child's face when they've just done something awful to their sibling. I don't know. Why is your brother crying? Beats me. am I my brother's keeper? And the Lord said, what have you done? What have you done? I mean, boy, I know what that feels like to say that to a child. What have you done? You know, you can't even imagine the enormity of the, and you wonder what is lurking in this child of mine that he's done this, you know. So, and then the other one that I get in Isaiah, so much sounding like a parent, so much a parent that. You know, God has been there and done that with parenting. You know, these people, the Israelites, just... So God is saying, I was ready to be sought out by those who did not ask. In other words, I was ready to be there to meet your needs. I was ready to be there to be found by those who did not seek me. I said, here I am, to a nation that did not call my name. I held out my hands all day long to a rebellious people who walk in a way that is not good, following their own devices, a people who provoke me to my face continually. I know that feeling. So I have enjoyed reading the Bible through that lens, and I hope that might be something that you can also enjoy. Secondly, the Bible clearly reveals to us that children are a blessing. And I'm talking, and those of you who maybe have grown children who are here, they don't cease to be a blessing once they've moved out of the home. That relationship continues. And I know I have a wonderful relationship with my mother, and I am very thankful for the way she parented. So we're not just talking about little children here. We're talking about the whole lifespan. But children are a blessing, and they are a gift, a complete gift from God. We see passages in the Bible that are just beautiful. Can you think of some that when a woman or a man has been told that they will have a child in the Bible?
Abraham and Sarah.
Sarah laughs. You've brought laughter to me in my old age, you know? Yeah. And Isaac means laughter. I think that's just a wonderful story. Or Hannah in 1 Samuel. My heart exalts in the Lord. My strength is exalted in my God. And then, of course, Mary, when she knows that she's to be the mother of Jesus.
And Elizabeth, too.
The baby leapt in her womb. And Eve, I hadn't really thought of this until I hadn't recognized this before, but Eve, when she becomes pregnant with Cain, says, we just did this yesterday, I have produced a man with the help of the Lord. I mean, I've always kind of thought of Eve as just kind of this cut and dry person, but you know, Eve says this, and that sounds celebratory to me, happy, you know. But not only are children a blessing to us and a gift to us, they are in their own right, fully human, and they have qualities that the Lord admires. And that the Lord asks us to look at and to be like. So these children are not just incomplete people. They come to us fully human. They certainly are not fully developed physically or intellectually. They need our help. They need our guidance. They need to be nurtured. But they are fully human, and they are as they grow, they have qualities and gifts that the Lord wants us to notice and to learn from. And I've been thinking about that, and I thought that would be interesting that God didn't just create people that were going to have qualities that children have. This hasn't been something that I've said yet. I've just been thinking about this, so let me see if I can say this clearly. He didn't just say, I will create some people that have really completely pure faith that I can say, look to people with, the visible mark on their temple to see how you should have faith like. They said, God says, have faith like a child. You know, there's something wonderful about the childhood, and if you work with children, or you have children or grandchildren, they go out on faith all the time. Faith in you, faith in God, faith in the world, faith in other people. We have to teach them to not have faith. You know, don't trust that person. Don't trust strangers. But they are just so ready to have faith. They just do. They just do. You know, it's... have any of you seen the movie The Third Miracle? It's just, I don't know if it just came out or not. I just noticed it. It's a Ed Harris movie, and that caught my eye. And he's a priest, but it opens up with the bombing during World War II in this town. And this little, you find out later, she's a gypsy girl. She's running a different direction from everybody else, and she runs to the steps of the cathedral and bows down. And is praying. And the airplanes are opening up, the bombs are coming out, and they just never hit the ground. And now, whether you're ready to believe in a modern-day miracle or not isn't necessarily the point, so much as it has provoked me to think about the faith of a child, the asking of a child. Without, how many times do we really have no... motives or other kind of hidden agendas that we think we're hiding from God when we're asking for things. I mean, that's a funny notion. If I don't say that, then he won't really, you know, God won't really know I'm thinking of that. And that's funny. But I just picture that little girl kneeling at the steps, just assuming that God will answer her prayer, just knowing that God will answer. And I think that it maybe has, we go off and on in our lives, maybe believing strongly and not so strongly that God really answers our prayers. So in Matthew 19, we hear, you know, let the children come to me and do not stop them, for it is to such as these that the kingdom of heaven belongs. And in Matthew 18, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? I tell you that unless you change and become like children, whoever humbles themselves like little children is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. We live in a very adult-centric society. We value people who are productive, who are well-mannered, who are clean. And those are nice things. I like to be around well-mannered, clean people. There's no doubt about it. But that is a value. It's just a concept we've created that's the preferred way. And until we can get our kids to be like that, then they're not fully, you know, they're not fully arrived yet. You know. And how many times do I? See my child as a reflection of me. You know, that's when my parenting deteriorates rapidly. They're embarrassing me. They're making me look bad. Now what's everybody going to think about me? and it's such a self-centered approach to child rearing, and we do it all the time. I mean, I am so guilty of that. Something I work daily to free myself of.
An example for that. My husband is serving on this vision and mission task force at our church, and we have Michaela. Some of you have seen her, and she's very active all the time. And she, you know, she was at church and, you know, sitting there and turning around and looking at people and doing all this sort of stuff. And Tom just was like, "Stop it!" And he was just getting very upset with her, you know. And I'm just. And she was just kind of being herself. It wasn't like overly disruptive. She was just kind of wiggling more and kind of wanted to sit in his lap, in my lap, and he was just getting really upset. And I couldn't figure it out later. And he talks a lot about homeostasis, but he said, you know, I realized it was because I'm on this vision and mission task force, and I feel like everybody's looking at me now, you know, and everybody's judging me. And he said, and then she was acting that way, and I felt like, and it was totally, and he was feeling like it was a reflection on him that she wasn't sitting there for herself.
Right,
still,
just
you know?
So interested.
So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sure that most of us have times that we can think of like that. I do it daily. The other night at Vespers, Hunter, my 8-year-old, just in a different way, but like Michaela, very, you just know who Hunter is, mostly because a couple of people come up to us and said, oh, you're Hunter's parents. Yeah, we've heard you yelling. He was like, Hunter! But he's hanging off the vest. You know, everybody's going into Vespers, and he's swinging on the pole. He's absolutely drenched because he's, you know, gotten into that water fountain after a football game. And yelling, you know, crowding past the people, pushing, trying to yell, Mama! 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 And I'm thinking, oh, Hunter, don't push those people in your filth there. I can't believe I... And, you know, I'm convicting my... I can't... Why didn't I get down here and think about getting him bathed and clean before going... And then I just thought, wait, wait. And so I shifted, and I looked at him, and I thought, I'm gonna... He's a child of God. Right now, I'm going to take away that this is a reflection on me. And I looked at him, and I thought, look at this boy. We're, you know, I'll save you a place. Mama, I'll save you a place. This happy child who was calling to me and, you know, willingly going into Vespers. And I'm thinking, okay. Yeah, okay. That's okay. He's a child of God who's happy, who I have the privilege of being called Mama, and he needs a bath. And that's okay. You know?
Badly.
Yeah.
But he's not the only one.
Right, right. But you know what? When it's your kid, it feels like the only one. Yeah. You know, we're so worried about our own that, you know, maybe Tom didn't even notice that the other kids there were doing the same thing, too. You know, that's just it. Every child at Vespers is dirty. Well, not really. Some parents take them. But that's neither good nor bad. That's just thinking makes it so. Like Shakespeare says, I think you're in the wrong class. I just wanted to put another plug in. This is at the bookstore, and it's one I hadn't seen before I came here, and I'm really glad that I found it here. It's called Regarding Children, A New Respect for Children, Childhood and Families. And these two have also written Leaving Home, and Getting Married, I think. So, it was like, just right here in this page, this is just great. Children are not simply incomplete adults. From birth, we are as fully human as we will ever become. Childhood is not merely the prelude to adulthood, but the child already has the value and depth of full humanity. And then this, personal account here is, I look at him now at 14, and I see in my son qualities which were present at birth, even before he was born. I assume I will see things about him again and be surprised again when he is 19 or 30. Now as I watch him assert his adolescent self, I see him as he was when he was new in the world, and again at 2, and again at 6 and 10. Some of it seems good, some of it I have anguished over every step of the way. Still, I could not have known who he would be at 14, though I've looked upon him and fought with him every day of his life. Every day he unfolds before me in a way I never could have anticipated, and yet his path is illuminated behind him for me to see. I just think that's really poignant. So if you get a chance to pick this book up, I haven't even finished this yet, but I assume that it will continue to be as good. Any other reflections on that second idea?
One thought that was running around in my head was that the relationship of the newborn infant to the, especially the mother, is one of expectation that needs are going to be met. You know, my first thought, well, it's a relationship of dependency, but it's not really. It's more of an expectation that my needs are going to be met. And so, I have no other way to get those met.
Yeah.
Other than through you. So when I cry, feed me, you know, is kind of the instinct, or I don't know if it's a thought.
I like that idea, that it's not, I like that reframing from just the hopefulness that the word expectation. Infants come into the world fully expecting their needs to be met.
And the fulfillment of those expectations is what develops, helps them get grounded in their abilities to self-regulate and self-control.
You meet those needs and then they begin to be able to meet them on their own.
Mastery.
Well,
If they don't get, if that doesn't happen, in that very, very early stage, then you've got this question, can the world support me?
Absolutely.
Or is the world friendly?
And then you have, so much of it is there. I mean, so much of it is right there. Do I trust the world or not? Am I capable or not? And if this person has been well attended to and nurtured, in fact, this goes right along. Self-esteem is a term that I have I haven't been in a school workplace for a long time, but you know, it was getting thrown around so much that for a while it lost its meaning for me. It's like everything was self-esteem. Self-esteem this, self-esteem. It's like, what is self-esteem? I mean, it's this nebulous concept. It's not ego. It's not the same as ego. It's not the same as self-confidence. But it's getting at what you're talking about, and it begins there. It a book written by Briggs, that'll help you a lot, won't it? I think that one is, I'll have to look at my bibliography. Your Child's Self-Esteem. she defines it as a child's quiet comfort with oneself. Even that is nebulous, but if you read her other stuff, then that kind of makes sense. But you can't really separate a child's self-esteem or a person's self-esteem from the way they have been nurtured. And it, if you just are accepted and loved and nurtured just because you are, you will have a sense of worth. Your sense of self, your comfort with yourself will just begin to blossom and continue to grow, and it will be an anchor for you. Yeah.
I was just, you know, as you're saying that and your response, I'm thinking about last week. Here they had several showings of this movie Affluenza, and which is about the basic concept is that people, we have much, much more than we had 20 years ago, but people feel so much less satisfied. And I think it's like that idea of if you've been shown very early, and what might be lacking is, you know, because parenting is not valued now, and we assume that daycare or, you know, some kind of anonymous provider that's not madly in love with the child. You know, I think it's great to have somebody that's irrationally in love with the child taking care of it. But that's an adequate substitute. And what kids really need is a lot more money so they can have more material things. And in this, the movie does a great job of showing how it's almost like a compulsion. People are buying more and more and more and more and more and feeling less and less and less satisfied. And you wonder if that, you know, if some of the root of that is just that lack of that really deep sense of trusting. I don't have to pile up a lot of stuff because I'm going to be okay. I mean, my needs are going to be met.
I went to a workshop once at This is the only thing I got out of it, but you know, if you take away one thing,
yeah,
that's good. And it's really interesting because what they taught was that when you're telling your children, and many of us do this very naturally, you say, well, mom's really proud of you, or dad's I'm really proud of you. But this workshop taught that you should really change that and to say, you should be really proud of yourself. And you're doing a great job, and you should be really proud of yourself, because then a child learns to have self-motivation and to know that they can, that they're it's not always externally.
Right.
It's not like I'm going to always try to win my father's, pride in me, or my mother's, or whoever. It's not externally, but it's internally motivated. And I've really tried to change that a lot when I tell, my girls, I'm glad you've done that, and you should be really proud of yourself. And I try to change the locus of control sort of back to them. So
yeah.
I don't know. It might be something just to kind of think about.
Yeah, or something like, oh, they show you a painting. I think that's really pretty. What do you think about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then give them, I think in the book Positive Discipline, they talk a lot about praise and the idea of praise being different than affirmation, and that praise can actually become addiction is a strong word, but when it's taken away, then they think something's wrong, rather than just that they can be okay even if all of these hordes of people are not praising them for their... Pam, could I just get you to scoot one chair over or two? I can't see your face when you're talking. I'm such a visual. I just like to see people that I'm talking to. Thank you. Yeah, I was just like...
I've had some thoughts about what you said, and I saw a condition felt so strongly about it that was a kind of shallow and false praise, and how damaging I thought that was. You know, if it's a sincere accomplishment,
right?
But that repeated praise that you are perfect, is so damaging.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, when you take it away.
Well, and then also it's like somebody said, I was reading something, it was like, it's becoming meaningless. I mean, we praise our children for sucking their thumb. Yeah, no, you're right. It's actually
damaging.
And what we get into then is this too precious child syndrome where I want to get into that also a little bit more, where they perceive them, there's sort of this false sense that they and they alone are the most precious in all of the world. And that, but then they know that that's not real. I mean, kids are smart. I mean, they have, all of us have a sense inside of ourselves, and we lose touch more and more with it. Dale Jamgard was here last week teaching, and he was talking about this, that we are born, we are born sinners, but that, I'm talking about... I have to be so careful about my language. Psychologically here, we're born okay, feeling okay about ourselves. And then we learn to feel not okay about ourselves. And so then we try to we squash down this real self and then build this layer. And then we try to pile up our accomplishments and rebuild ourselves. So I think that false praise kind of adds to this building up, trying to convince myself I am somebody. And then... we've lost, and again, and that is sin. That is sin. Losing, not being connected with the fact that we are children of God, and that alone makes us remembering who we are and whose we are. Was somebody over here going to say something, and then I interrupted?
Who was it the other day that was talking about we are human beings, not human doings? And again, the idea of separating the person from the accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
If you're praising the accomplishment, it's conditional instead of the person. And that's what you're getting at. You should be proud of yourself. You know that the person is good, even if what they have made, done, whatever, is, subject to judgment.
Yeah.
That's not the point. the person is good in their in who they are.
And it really gets back to the prodigal son stuff. This is about relationship. This is about me being in relationship with you. This is about you being God's child and you being a child of mine, and I love you and I always will. And oh, by the way, I love that painting that you just did. And or how did you feel about how you did in the school play today? Or, you know, just those things are secondary, the doings, you know. But just being and being accepted for that is...
You know, and sometimes you learn that the hardest way. I have my oldest is so opposite to me, and we've clashed from the minute he was born, probably. He was a no-napper, so right away, you know, I was like, oh, this kid. But he was interested in learning and exploring. And later on in life, when I would get on to, you know, you don't do this right. You're not doing what I would do. And he comes back with, you know, get a life kind of thing. And, well, why should I do that? And his focus is on being.
Yeah.
Mine's on doing. And he's teaching me to alter my focus a little bit in not so subtle ways sometimes, but some subtle ways.
Yeah.
And you know, we still will have our clashes, I know.
Absolutely.
Because I know it in my head, the behavior and the person are separate, and I still...
Oh, it's just, oh yeah, oh yeah. And as parents, you know, we spend so much of our time trying to shape and mold, and those are good things. I mean, these children who have been entrusted to us, I mean, I think the Lord expects us to put energy in shaping and molding and so forth, but when that gets into, I'm going to try to make you identical to me, you know, and we all do that, you know, and then that's kind of where we miss the opportunity to know our children. That's really what's going on. We miss the opportunity to know who they are because we're so busy trying to make them like us. Mm-hmm. And that's, I had a woman tell me one time who's in her mid-30s, doesn't have kids, isn't married, has always wanted to be married and had children. And she said to me, the thing that I would love about parenting, about being a parent, would be that incredible experience of watching your child unfold before your eyes and getting to know them better each day. And I thought, wow, see now. Interesting. Yeah. And I had to I had to pause and think about that. And it's what these authors are saying too, Henderson and Johnson, what the woman was reflecting on in there. And we miss them in our busyness. We miss hearing what they're saying. The course that I teach in churches called Interactive Parenting, it focuses so much on without interaction, we cannot parent our children effectively or be in relationship, because if we're doing that, you do this, blah, 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 we're taking nothing in from them. How can we know how to meet their needs? If we don't know what their perspective is, if we don't know what they're thinking or feeling or wanting or wrestling with or the barrier they can't get over in order to cooperate with you, then how can we begin to talk to them in a meaningful way to them? It does just sound like that blah, blah, blah ginger thing, you know, that cartoon that, if you ever saw that, a dog's perspective of people talking to them. So anyway, we need to interact, we need to talk, and we need to listen, and we need to change our language for each of our children. And that's kind of getting into more of the real practical components, which is also something that's really valuable to talk about. But you know, some disciplinary techniques will work with some kids and not others. I mean, each child comes to you differently, different temperament, different desires, different drives, different dark sides that they're wrestling with, different temptations. And unless we're, if we still try to, you know, cut out this way we're going to parent and just stick it on them, it's just not going to work. You know, they're going to be coming out all sides of it. And that can be all the way from, you know, do you use timeouts with your child or not? Is that effective or not? One child of mine, boy, that was it. That was so motivating. You know, 2 minutes in that, you know, it just taking a breather and coming back to the group was it. The other one felt like, she was being sent to, you know, Siberia. That was so punitive. That was so punitive that more damage was done. That did not help. That made things worse, you know. So being aware, being in tune with those things, is this helping the situation or not? I'll move on to the third point, which is actually, or the third thing that I like to think about the Bible revealing, which was actually my first point, which back to that the children are not your own and they're not your possession. They are. Imagine for a minute that God comes to you and hands you this baby, literally hands it to you and says, can you take care of this for me? Will you raise this child for me? What do you think he would say with that? What were some of the things that he might say, like if you're going to leave instructions for a babysitter? You know, the first one that comes to my mind is, tell them about me. Tell your child about me. Or tell my child about me. Tell them how much I love them. What are some other things that you think would...
Love this child.
Love this child. Yeah.
Same thing my father-in-law told me when we started our honeymoon. Take good care of her.
Uh-huh. And what is good care? What do you think good care is?
It's everything.
Yeah.
Well, was keeping her safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking of a child, I mean, keeping the child safe, mm-hmm. keeping the child well nurtured and loved and fed and help that child be who they are.
Right, who they were intended to be, yeah.
And not over control.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a little bit. Often with a babysitter, you'd say, now, you know, he or she likes to do this, and they do this, and this is kind of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So be aware
mm-hmm.
of that. And so the same God would, I think, say, now, this is who this person is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honor that.
Yeah. How many of you got the exact child that you put your order in for? You did?
I love my children.
Oh, of course you do.
Yeah. Almost. Well.
See, that's my point, is that they, God thought of things that I hadn't even thought of.
Oh, well, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And we all laughed because I also meant what we were laughing about was, no, I have my struggles that I didn't order. But... there are things thrown in, combinations of things that I would have never thought of that are pure delight.
Yeah, and frustration.
Both. Yep.
Happy.
Yep. And if you can approach those things not with, and this could be a daily reminder, if I expect my child to be who I always want them to be, now I'm using child and them, but if I expect my child to be who I always want her to be, who I expect her to be, who I, you know, what I had in mind for her to be, I will always be disappointed. See, I think that's where parents end up being so disappointed, is their expectations. But then if we allow ourselves to say, wait, this is pure gift, and anything is just... so, such a marvel. And that doesn't mean we're just going to be, oh, look at how he beat that other child. Isn't that cute, you know? I'm not saying anything, any behavior's okay, and we should just delight in every activity. But that if we see that, once again, if we come back to who is this child intended to be? Who is this child? I need to get to know this child. and yeah, I think that the Lord was much more imaginative and creative in who the child I was handed than I could have even put down on a list, you know. So what happens then? Okay, so the children are not our own. So when, oh yeah.
Just another thought, I was thinking about some of the instructions God might have, you know, as he's giving us our child,
yeah,
or his child. This child's going to change you, and it's important that you accept that.
Mm-hmm, good, yeah. Won't they, though? I mean, don't they?
For me, becoming a mother probably taught me more, helped me understand more God's love for me than anything else, because, you know, I mean, you know, it is unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I love my children regardless of what they do. I mean, you know, obviously there's days when I'm frustrated with their behavior,
right,
and some things they do, but, you know.
But
I mean,
your love is never called into question.
Right, right. I mean, they are always loved.
Well, what's interesting about that is in, I just kind of giggled when I saw this, in the, I think it's still the newest edition of the Small Catechism, in Luther's explanation of the fourth commandment, honor your mother and father. And now I don't have that memorized, and I don't have my Small Catechism with me. But what's interesting to note is that he added, oh, I just wish that I could. Well, look it up when you get home. I looked in the library, I can't find one. But there's an asterisk next to it, and it's the definition of loving, you know, how to love and honor your mother and father, and also what the mother and father should do. Well, there's an asterisk that notes that he added that after the birth of his first child. Or his one of his children, when his child was five, you know. But anyway, that his understanding of God's love for him and parenting and so forth, and the role of mother and father changed when he, and that's like talk about change. I mean, this is Martin Luther, you know. You sort of think, you know, I could sort of think of him as just like a rock. Like this is what is. And here this kind of reveals that actually this was a man, an incredible theologian, in relationship with God, that also was open to change and was changed by the birth of his, what did he have? How many kids did Martin Luther have? Lots, I think.
As part of the Judaism class last week, one of the classes was called God Wrestling. It's, you know, that sort of the Old Testament tradition of arguing and struggling with God. One of the concepts that came out is, you know, as God tells Abraham he's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham says, wait a minute, you said you were a just God. And would a just God do this? And essentially Abraham kind of talks him into relenting a little bit. And you know, we use several other examples, but it's the idea that there's this motto or this idea that you know, God was a parent for the first time, too. God never created a world before, and God changes and moderates himself as he sees the weaknesses of humanity.
Mm-hmm. He did. We see God doing that throughout the Old Testament, is pursuing these rebellious people, constant pursuit, and willing to change, and change his mind, you know.
Like in the beginning of Exodus, you get the feeling that they're going to go out of Egypt, they're going to go down the road, they're going to set up shop in Canaan, and there's all these failings in the desert, and you get the feeling that God at some point realizes that maybe a group of people who are raised in slavery really don't have what it takes to go in and conquer the Canaanites and take over the promised land. And maybe he decided at that point that he's got to wait until this generation passes and a new generation comes in. And that's, you know, when example perhaps of God changing his expectations based upon what he finds humans capable of.
And also back to the this was my mind about the intention and what this child was intended to be and the plan for the children. When I think about John the Baptist, and somebody raised Elizabeth as being one of the stories where there's a birth that's an impending birth that's a blessing. It tells us so clearly. Now, John inside Elizabeth's womb leapt when the mother of his Lord came. Okay, God has a plan for John the Baptist already. You know, this is, Elizabeth wasn't privy to that. Elizabeth didn't know that this was John the Baptist she was carrying that was going to go, you know, have this incredible, you know, preparing the way of the Lord and then ending up with his head chopped off at, you know, some random party. But, you know, we don't know. I just heard a sermon on that I liked so much. That it's not just in our, I mean, that's such an insignificant death for John the Baptist, but it was his life. It was preaching the word, speaking the word throughout his life was the significant mission. Not, you know, we probably won't all die tremendous, earth, you know, shattering, meaningful deaths. Most of us will probably just die, you know, pretty insignificantly, except to the people that love us. And, but that what we do during our life is the real kicker. So anyway, keep in mind that God has a plan for your child, and we don't necessarily know what that is. We have to watch that as it progresses, also, and as your children find their way and figure out what they think that God's plan is also for them. Now, before we leave, we have just about 5 minutes. I want us to extend our view a little bit. So, if my child is not my own, your child is not your own, none of us in the room, these are God's children. We are God's children. We are all baptized into Christ. We are brothers and sisters. What happens to not just our own children, but how do we view other people's children differently when we think about that? Maybe we no longer see a bully kid that calls my kid names at the playground. Maybe we see a hurting child who hasn't been nurtured, who hasn't been loved, who hasn't been taught, who needs attention, who needs to be taught that is not the way, that's not the way to be in community. And this doesn't even have to be a bully that's beating us up or beating our children up. This can be just the little, you know, judgments we pass in our mind. You know, like if somebody was there thinking about Michaela, you know, look at that girl who can't sit still. You know, how could we shift our thinking of other people's children? No longer, you know, oh, that child. But I want to read then the theme for the summer, which is found in Galatians 3, chapter 26 through 29. For in Christ Jesus you are all children of God through faith. As many of you as were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. There is no longer Jew or Greek. There is no longer slave or free. There is no longer male and female. And maybe we could add, there is no longer your child and my child. For all of you are one in Jesus Christ. And if you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to the promise. Maybe this view, this lens, can help us not only with be more compassionate, more just with our own children, but with all children. And adults need to be advocates for children. For some children, life is getting better and better and better and better. And for other children, it's just getting worse and worse. I think, you know, statistics, children, the number of children living in poverty is increasing. You open up the newspaper and the stories are horrific. And those are the ones that make it into the newspaper. Those aren't the countless lonely kids sitting in schools or not even getting to school that day. that need our help. They need our love. They don't need our judgment. And sparing the rod, spoiling the child, just have to, you know, this is not, the shepherds didn't beat their sheep with their rods. This is not a call to spank your child. This is a call to keep your, you know, to guide your children, to pull them up out of the crevasse if they fall with the hook, you know. And we can do this with other children as well. We can use our rod to help other children as well. And so I'd encourage you to think about that and add that on to the divisions that being baptized into Christ as brothers and sisters, the divisions that breaks down.
I think it starts in neighborhoods, those of us whose children aren't home anymore, you know, just enjoying the children in the neighborhood and not, what to my grandkids,
yeah.
Does that matter, you know?
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. That's absolutely right. It's the little stuff. It's the
yes,
little stuff like that.
Said. Or in church when somebody says, those children
yeah.
should be in church, and I think that's where they should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like there is that group of people that would like to keep children removed until they have mastered adult-like behavior, you know, until they can come and sit quietly. And maybe we can just start a little at a time. Maybe if I develop that, I can share that point of view with somebody else. And maybe then they will begin to think about it. And then, but you can be such a blessing to a child. Even like learn other children's names in the village besides your own and watch their face light up when you call them by name. You know, they just do. And then they'll pretty soon, this happened to me last week, this little boy named Carrie, so cute. I just started, hi, Carrie. And then one day I looked over and he was like waving to me. And his mom comes up and he said, oh, Carrie was telling me you were his friend. And I was like, oh, you know, that's just, they love that. That's so affirming, calling them by name, you know. But thank you for coming. And on Thursday, and I'm glad that some people with grown children came to the class. I appreciate that. And on Thursday, even more so, we'll be talking about parenting with a vision. And so what is the framework? We can't, prescriptive parenting doesn't get us, you know, Jesus didn't come and during his lifetime try to exhaust every situation that we might encounter and tell us what to do. He gave us principles and ethics to live by. And so as parents, then, we can develop a vision. We can develop principles and ethics and continually call ourselves back to those. And so those of you who have adult children, we'd welcome input from that angle, too, and the perspective of the parent-child relationship being a lifelong relationship. So, thank you.